Hey, what's going on, everybody? It is Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. Welcome to this latest edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony, as always. Thank you very much for joining me. For those who celebrated the 4th of July weekend, hope you had a good one. I definitely did. A little bit too much relaxation. We are back in the swing of things, and even though it was a holiday weekend, doesn't mean that there isn't wrestling news to get into, and we definitely have a few things to get into today. As we do on Wednesdays, we dedicate Wednesdays primarily to NXT and AEW. We will sprinkle in a little bit of Impact Wrestling and MLW and Indies when needed. Upon request, we will talk New Japan as well. We save Raw, SmackDown, and WWE Premium Live events for other nights. And again, even though it was a holiday weekend, doesn't mean there wasn't news. The big buzz going around today is the awful collision rating that came down on July 1st. And yes, last week you and I talked that we expected the rating to go down a little bit. Yes, it is a holiday weekend. That's not necessarily an excuse. You know, I think just the spoilers, and majority of people read spoilers, let's be honest here. The spoilers did not look all that great. You know, not for nothing, when you see MJF taking on Kip Morst, whatever the guy's name was, you know, what does that tell you? Like right at the beginning, Miro is in action. You know whoever he's facing is not going to be an extremely big name or even someone, you know, near his level. You know, we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. We'll get into the trend. And we'll also remind everyone of the bag of beans that so many in the wrestling media world that have power, that have voice, that have much bigger voice than I do. You know, I think there's a lot of you out there that are getting sick and tired of being lied to and sick and tired of being pushed an agenda instead of news. You know, what's going on with Collision right now does not surprise me in the least. If you checked out my preview show a couple of days before Collision debuted, you know, we saw this a mile away. And at the end of the day, you know, I know when I posted the poll on social media, it was interpreted as negative, even though I've said since the beginning that, you know, Saturday, it feels like it's going to be a Saturday Night Dynamite. And that's not a bad thing, as long as people understand what they are getting, you know. But instead, people pushed this, that it was going to be something entirely different, that it was going to be a segregated roster, then it was going to be a hard split, then it was going to be a soft split, and literally within 72 hours, CM Punk is on Dynamite. You know, you see things like Miro in action. That's something you do on Rampage and Dynamite. You see MJF makes his Collision wrestling debut as if it's a brand new promotion. It's just another TV show. And his first match is against Kip Moist, whatever the guy's name is. I mean, you see, it's the Dynamite format because the people running the ship are the same people running Dynamite, running Rampage. You get a little bit of creative input by some of the wrestlers that are on Saturday nights, but at the end of the day, they're not the ones making the decisions. So we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. Just wanted to bring up quickly NXT. You know, the big news coming out of NXT, and I got to be honest with you, I am shocked. I am shocked that this is not a big-time conversation amongst wrestling fans. It's not. I mean, it's not trending. It didn't trend last night. But the Creed brothers, Brutus Creed and Julius Creed, they lost a Loser Leaves NXT match against the Dyad. And we all know the Grizzled Young Veterans, the Dyad, Rip Fallow, Jagger Reed, they gave their notice WrestleMania weekend that they wanted out from WWE. WWE said, no, you will leave when your contract ends in the fall, I think around October. And they even visibly posted that on social media, which WWE cannot be happy with. And then for the next 2.5 months, with the exception of Ava Raines' NXT TV debut, they lost every fucking match. Every match. And last week, we find out that the Creed brothers are taking on the Dyad in a Loser Leaves NXT match. And we're like, oh, okay, WWE changed their mind and they are going to let the grizzled young veterans leave sooner. And this was going to be their last match. And, you know, I originally was going to write on their pages, you know, thank you and appreciation. Anybody that's followed my show for the first couple of years that they were in NXT, I was not a fan. I never clicked with them. I remember their earlier days, main event in NXTs, taking on Breezango and others and seeing those numbers drag into the fours. Their quarter hour ratings were consistently the lowest of the night. I just never got into them. I remember saying that they're probably going to do comedy shit with them, try to get them over a little bit more, similar to what they did with the Revival / FTR back in the day. And then we got some of those segments where they were on the streets and everything, and it didn't work. But something happened a year ago. I don't know if it's just working their ass off and just delivering week after week after week. They started to grow on me. And it wasn't the schism storyline. I mean, early on with Joe Gacy, I was digging it. I liked the tweak of their look. But at the end of the day, I just, you know, couldn't get into them for a couple of years. About a year ago, that changed. And they quickly became probably my favorite tag team in NXT. Once Imperium went to the main roster, that was it. Grizzled Young Veterans were probably my favorite tag team. And they have delivered. Week after week, they suck it up. They're not happy that WWE will not let them leave sooner. And they do not take it out on their fellow wrestlers. They do not take it out on the fans. And yesterday, NXT, and yes, I read the spoilers a week ago, so I knew it was going to go down. But the Creed brothers, they lost! They lost! The Dyad remain in NXT and the Creed brothers are gone. Now, they're not gone from WWE. This is why I'm surprised we're not getting any buzz about it. The Creed brothers are coming to the main roster. The only question right now is, should they be on Raw or should they be on SmackDown? And I'm kind of torn between the two. I think they actually would do better on SmackDown because I think they would get a little bit better high-profile matches. On Raw, though, I could see them tossing around the Viking Raiders. I could see them getting into it with some great tag teams. But then again, SmackDown, Gallows and Anderson, LWO, they even, you know, Hit Row, they get a squash. So I kind of think I'd rather see the Creed brothers on SmackDown. But then again, Raw, with that third hour, some people get some opportunity that gets lost on SmackDown, because SmackDown's only 2 hours, but I'm surprised more people aren't talking about it. The Creed brothers going to the main roster, oh, man. I mean, they are still, I don't want to say green. They're not green anymore. They definitely have improved enough that they deserve to be in the main roster. And I'll tell you this, I'm glad that they didn't get drafted to the main roster. Doing this Loser Leaves NXT was a hell of a lot of fun because, again, me included, before reading the spoilers, I thought the Dyad were done. I thought that was it. I started thinking to myself, are they going to keep Ava Rain with Joe Gacy and that's it? You know, like, what happens to the other two? And, no, they're still a cohesive unit as of right now. Although, there's still dissension. You know, Joe Gacy got his ass ejected yesterday on NXT, and he really did not help the Dyad's cause. So I still think that there's going to be a split and a schism. There already is. But for now, the Dyad stay a little bit longer. So let's get into Collision and the rating. And, you know, on the surface, yeah, holiday weekend, younger fans are more prone to go out. But let's be a little honest here, if we're going to be honest about everything. You know, when you look at demos, I don't talk about demos. You know me, I hate bringing up demos unless it is something really newsworthy that should be discussed. Because as far as we're concerned, demos and the ratings should be the concern of the wrestling companies, the networks, and the advertisers, and the wrestlers. Because if a wrestler consistently keeps causing viewerships to leave in significant amounts, you know, we remember when we used to talk about the Grizzled Young Veterans. Breezango and others on NXT. They would get 100,000-plus viewership drops. You do that consistently, you get buried. It's not, oh, the ratings don't matter. Sure, they matter. But something that I saw that really, really caught my eye. Now, for those that don't know, Collision this past Saturday. You know, when we started with Collision 2 weeks ago, we had 816,000 viewers on their debut. Pretty close to what we expected. I said it would be low eights, upper sevens, around there. Last week, it dropped down to 595,000 viewers, which honestly was concerning. The problem is, and this is, you know, part of what AEW, I hope that Tony Khan has realized this by now. I hope the people behind the scenes that matter in AEW have realized this now. You cannot depend on the media out there that overly gushes for AEW, because you could see that instead of maybe expressing not just criticism, if you notice, people will call out low ratings and low, but they never come up with solutions. Because how dare they pretty much say to AEW, you are not doing it the way it should be, or you're doing something wrong. Instead, there's an excuse for everything. There's an excuse for everything. If you want a little bit of fun, go on Google. Type in AEW Collision ratings, ratings prediction, some combination of that. But don't just click enter. Click advanced settings and do a date search. And search from like May 15th to June 15th, before the first Collision episode debut. And look at the pundits, the people with a lot of power and voice, and what they were predicting, not only what the ratings would be, but what they were telling everybody for six to plus weeks. It wasn't just the announcement of Collision. You know, the rumors that they were going to get a Saturday night show, that went on longer than that. But once they announced Collision, they were trying to convince everyone that this was going to be a totally different type of show, that it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be on, you know, the goofy, you know, corny storylines and the campy stuff on Dynamite, that this is going to be emphasizing wrestling, and rosters are going to be segregated, and it was a hard split, then it was a soft split, and then CM Punk is literally on Dynamite 72 hours after he debuts on Collision. And people were trying to portray that, you know, for those that maybe don't like, you know, the over-the-top campy stuff on Dynamite, Collision is going to be hard-nosed, serious, you know, pro wrestling, great promos, no corny shit. And almost immediately, you got Sting and Darby Allin teasing who their tag team partner is going to be at Forbidden Door. You have BS championship being defended on TNT. You got which is one of the things I can't stand about AEW, Miro in action, MJF in action. Whenever they do that, after 4 years, we realize that whoever their opponent is going to be is not even going to be someone that would give them a half decent match, but it's going to be somebody extremely low on the food chain, and it always follows with some corny, stupid segment. I'm not saying that Ethan Page is a corny, stupid segment, but when they advertise for Collision this past Saturday that MJF is going to have his Collision wrestling debut, motherfucker was on TV 3 days before. We're supposed to feel like he's debuting for a new promotion, and who does he face? Kip Moist, whatever the guy's name is. And you look at the preview, you see MJF against Kip Moist. And then you see that Miro will be in action. You know whoever he faces is not going to be much of anything. Andrade cuts a promo, but he's not there. You know, it's Saturday Night Dynamite. And this is what I said since my debut preview episode before the debut of Collision. This was Saturday Night Dynamite. the only thing that we got to hope is that they start giving pushes to the wrestlers who fall through the cracks on Wednesdays. And after a couple of weeks, not only do we have no Thunder Rosa, not even doing interview segments, you know, and please don't tell me that, oh, she's doing Spanish announcement. No. She should have been on TV every week in some capacity. But you have Hobbs and Starks. Yes, they're still in the Owen Hart tournament. Not to disrespect Owen Hart. I have been a wrestling fan since 79. I beloved Owen Hart. I cried like everybody else when he died tragically. It's a moment in wrestling that is awful. And Owen Hart, you know, is so sorely missed. But this tournament does not give anybody the impression that it means push. What happens after the tournament is over? They have a belt, they have a commemorative trophy, and then what? People aren't stupid. They can feel the perception. You know, just giving someone TV time is great, but if you feel like the usual people are the ones being pushed, the Moxleys, the Claudios, the Elite, the Omegas, the Guevaras, Jericho, and these aren't bad people, but when you see Starks have the feud with MJF, and that night, Ricky Starks, people are like, holy fucking shit. I mean, who would have ever thought that he could out-promo MJF? And then we're like, all right, let's see a month from now. Let's see where Ricky Starks is. Do you feel that Ricky Starks is any higher on the food chain? No, not at all. Powerhouse Hobbs walked the streets of L.A., the Book of Hobbs, it opened, it closed, pages were torn out. They were re-glued. He's with QT Marshall. He's this, he's that, he's this. Oh, he's in the Owen Hart tournament. Does it feel like he's got any advancement at all? He gets the TNT championship, and before you know it, his vintage Cutlass gets trashed and he loses the belt. Wardlow, you think a little momentum, maybe he gets featured a little bit more in a different way, a little bit more of a serious Wardlow. You see what happens with him. But if you follow online to the people that make the loudest noise in favor of AEW, everything's epic, everything is amazing, everything is unbelievable. Collision is the hottest show on cable, wrestling, and across the board. Why? Because you get a great match between Andrade and Buddy Matthews? Yeah, they're great talents. But you go to the debut of Collision, that rating didn't even break 800,000 when the match was on. I mean, AEW Collision's debut was 816,000 viewers. That match did 773. It's a great match, but it's not a match that's going to tear the house down and draw big numbers. So Collision this past Saturday, did 432,000 viewers. Not only is it about 50% of what the rating was compared to Collision's debut, let me give you a demo number that's going to blow your mind. The 18 to 34 male demographic, that demo is everybody and their mother brings up demos. They bring up 18 to 34, they bring up 18 to 49. You know me, I don't ever cover demos unless it's newsworthy. Do you know that in a matter of 3 weeks from episode one to episode three, the male 18 to 34 demographic has gone down 90% for AEW Collision. 90%. I'll go a little bit further. The 18 to 49 demographic for this past Collision drew 116,000 viewers. 116. Okay? Now, when you think about, you know, SmackDowns and you hear 800,000, 900,000 in that same demo, it gives you a little perspective. What is your audience? And again, I'm not comparing SmackDown. I'm just making a point. You start asking yourself, what audience is Collision designed for? What age demographic? Are they trying to get, you know, all across the board? Do 18 to 34-year-olds, do they want to see just straight-up great wrestling? are the 18 to 34-year-old AEW fans, are they now used to and only want the triple C's? The chaos, the clusterfuck, the crackerjack surprises. Do they want a different format than what they get on Dynamite? I say no. I said it before the first debut edition of Collision, that I thought Collision was going to be Saturday night Dynamite. Everybody and their mother, who matters in the media world, insisted otherwise. And after 3 weeks, even though I posted that poll, and those who don't tune into my shows looked at that poll and said, oh, this guy's shitting on Collision. No, I wasn't. Because since day one, I believed that Collision was just going to be another Dynamite. And I went into the show expecting the format to be very much like Dynamite, to see the same type of skits and segments like Dynamite. Yeah, you got Nigel McGuinness and Kevin Kelly, which are, they're good. They're good. Let's give them time to grow. I like hearing them call the matches. It gives a little bit of a different feel. But at the end of the day, Collision feels like two more hours of Dynamite. At least with WWE programming. Raw, SmackDown, majority of the wrestlers that are on those shows are different. NXT is different from Raw and SmackDown. When you look at each show has a distinctive, different personality about themselves. It's not just a different name. You look at Collision, and you take away that logo, and you put Dynamite's logo in place of it, and you advertise the same lineup like last week. MJF in action. MJF versus Ethan Page, Dustin Rhodes versus Powerhouse Hobbs, Bullet Club Gold, you know, Ricky Starks and Juice Robinson, Christian Cage cutting a promo, Sean Spears, Chris Statlander, Lady Frost, Roderick Strong, Samoa Joe. You take that exact thumbnail of Collision's preview of last week and put Dynamite's logo instead. 95% of everyone online would be like, oh, wow, Wednesday night Dynamite, wow, that, it looks like a hot crowd. Kind of sucks that the Elite are not on there and, you know, Jericho's not being advertised. That's probably the biggest extent of it. You know, so it's not anything different. But people tried to convince you for well over a month, almost 2 months, that Collision was going to be something entirely different. And after 2 weeks, the young viewers, the younger viewers, said, you know what? I'd rather do something else. Do not blame it on a holiday weekend. Do I think Collision will have a better rating next week? Yeah, because it'll be live. That in itself is enough for me. They'll get back into the sixes. I'm pretty confident they'll get back into the sixes. Upper fives would be a little, you know, disappointing. But when you look at those very, very young viewers, you know, it seems like their targeted demographic is older people. Think about that. They drew 432,000 viewers. 116 of them were 18 to 49. Of that 116, 105 of those 116 were 35 to 49, because there's only 11,000 people, men between 18 and 34. So now you look at 432,000 viewers and you say to yourself, one quarter of that viewership were between the ages of 35 and 49. What does that tell you? That almost everybody that's watching that show is either 35 years old or older. Is that going to get 700,000, 800,000 viewers? Is it going to get in the sixes at the end of the day? You know, you don't want Collision to be this niche product for 40-year-olds. I don't think that is what WarnerMedia is gunning for. Dave Meltzer, a couple of weeks ago, was talking about Collision. He said something that always stuck with me. Now, remember, and I'm a supporter of Dave Meltzer. A couple of things, you know, I will call him out on, I'll disagree, and I'll criticize him when needed, but I still support the guy. But remember, this is the same guy that said that if All In at Wembley does 40,000, that is a major success. 40,000. Might have even said a little less. I got the thumbnail saved somewhere. But when talking about Collision, he didn't talk about number of viewers. He talked about demo, 18 to 49 demo. And he said, and I quote, in this day and age, if AEW Collision could get a 0.24 consistently on Saturdays, given all the competition on Saturdays, the show will be viewed as a success because that's double what the station was doing in that time slot. Two successful shows up the value of the promotion and make it more attractive to potential rights buyers next year. That demo Saturday was 0.13. Rampage is 0.13. Notice how he said two successful shows, not three, because between the lines, Rampage has been a major disappointment. Rampage this past Friday did 450,000 viewers. Collision did 452,000 viewers. Rampage's rating from Friday in the demo did 0.13. Collision did 0.13. If you look at the top 150 shows on basic cable, if you look at this past Saturday and look at the 24th of June, the shows that were on both nights, with the exception of a few that were pre-recorded, like On Patrol Live and others, their ratings were pretty much the same. If you look at Sunday's top 150 cable TV ratings and compare it to the week or prior, you will see that the numbers are very, very consistent. You look at Friday, the fact that it was 4th of July weekend, when you look at almost everybody else, pre-recorded shows, yes, those will draw smaller ratings. That's why I'm not overly concerned about the 432, but this trend over the first 3 weeks of Collision is very, very concerning. You know, when CM Punk cut his live promo on June 17th, that opening quarter did 868,000 viewers, and at 18 to 49 that everybody gushes over, half of the viewers, half, were watching Dynamite. 868,000 overall, 18 to 49, 440,000. Over half of the viewers were that demo. Last week, Collision had opening quarter at 605,000 viewers. That was CM Punk, Ricky Starks, FTR, Bullet Club Gold, Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, Darby Allin, Sting, Tetsuya Naito, Miro, cutting a backstage promo, the Didima. That opening quarter did 605,000 viewers, almost 300,000 viewers less than a week early. That was not a holiday weekend. 283,000 of those viewers were 18 to 49. So it went from over half to less than half. This past Saturday's Collision, that opening quarter, which was MJF with Kip Moist, Ethan Page, and Owen Hart promos to lead for the tournament, that opening quarter did 473,000 viewers, and that same demo, not even a third. Not even a third. When you close out Collision, CM Punk's first match back, FTR and CM Punk versus Jay White, Juice Robinson, and Samoa Joe, that final quarter from 2 weeks ago did 834,000 viewers, 467,000 of them 18 to 49 demo, almost 60% of those viewers. Last week, 634,000 to close out Collision, which featured CM Punk, FTR, Ricky Starks, Bullet Club Gold. Kind of feels like the same shit, right? That final quarter did 634,000 viewers, 289,000 of them were the 18 to 49, which is less than half. And then we have this past Saturday, the final quarter, Roderick Strong, Samoa Joe, CM Punk on commentary, Roddy stretchered out, Adam Cole out there. That final quarter did 430,000 viewers. Only 170,000 of them in an 18 to 49. So when you see, and the interesting thing about it, my friends, is that if you look at all 3 weeks in a row, their rating from beginning to end is very, very close. You know, if you, when we talk about Raw, we talk how they could have 400,000-600,000 viewers less by the end of Raw because it's 3 hours and people get tired. Even SmackDown at times, minus this Bloodline storyline, you would get, you know, 100,000-300,000 viewers closing out SmackDown lower than, you know, what they open with. When you look at Collision's debut, they opened at 868, they closed at 834. Very close. Last week, they started with 605, they closed with 634. They actually went up at the very end. And then this past Saturday, they opened with 473 and they closed with 430. So what that tells you is that when you look at 3 weeks of Collision, there aren't any segments where people in droves are like, ah, you know, this, I'm done. And they turn it off and they don't turn it back on. Now it feels like you got to get them to turn the TV on and put it on to Collision. And in a matter of 2 weeks, yeah, the rating is down almost 50%. But that demo that everybody talks about, 18 to 34, second most talked about demo next to 18 to 49, went down 88%, 89% technically. So I personally think they have to stop this shit with, I know it sounds minuscule, but they got to stop this shit when they put so-and-so in action. We've had 4 years of that. Whenever we see somebody in action, you know, we see them every week. Yeah, I know Miro is back and Andrade is back, but if they're not getting pushed and it doesn't feel like it's going to lead to a legitimate championship run, you know, being back on TV is all great and everything, but I'm not going to not go out or watch something else simply because Miro's back on my screen or Andrade's back on my screen. You got to get me to want to watch the show, period. No, any individual. CM Punk turning heel, that'll cause a little controversy. People will want to see CM Punk get his ass kicked. You know, that will definitely influence the numbers. The problem is CM Punk, and you look at even the first 3 weeks of Collision, he can't be on TV for half the show. You know, even when you look at SmackDowns and everybody's like, oh, look, Roman Reigns. What happens is the Bloodline storyline is so strong. That's the draw to get people to tune in and stay watching the show for the full 2 hours. You will get that final jolt at the end when Jimmy Uso super kicked Roman and Jey Uso kicked Roman. And you look at that $400,000 viewer spike for the final quarter. Yeah, you will get a couple of 100,000 people that aren't watching SmackDown at all, but are going to tune in for the end because they want to see what the climax is. But for the most part, they're getting people to tune in from the beginning and stay tuned in. You know, you got to get people in the door. You know, when you have a restaurant, you have a business, you got to do something to get people in the door. Believe it or not, my dad, and I'm not trying to compare AEW to my dad, but I'll just make a point. My dad has had his deli supermarket in business open since 1982. And early on, my dad had to do little promotions, give out, you know, free this, free that, you know, have somebody make a special appearance, a celebrity or something, just to get people in the door. He felt that once people went into the store, they will shop. When you go to a supermarket and you walk in or they advertise like, come in and you could meet so-and-so or you can get a sample of this for free and this and that, you get people in the door and hopefully when they look around, they decide, you know what, I'm going to stay for a little bit. I'm going to shop. You want to get people. Why do you think even with baseball teams, they will have theme nights? They want to get people through the turnstile. They want to get people in the building. That's what AEW needs to do. You can't simply put on a thumbnail that this person's going to make their wrestling debut. This is person's going to be in action. The Owen Hart tournament. You know, Chris Statlander, I am a big fan of Chris Statlander. I know a lot of you are as well. But her run already feels like Jade Cargill's run. That she, of course, we don't expect her to lose the championship anytime soon. But I'd rather see Chris Statlander start a feud, maybe with Taya Valkyrie, have some pull-aparts, get attacked, call her out, have a back-and-forth, you know, exchange for 1 or 2 weeks. I don't want to just see her wrestling. You know, her versus Lady Frost was a fun match, but I already know the outcome. Why am I going to, you know, stop doing what I'm doing this weekend just to see her win? I could watch it on a replay. So there's a lot of things that AEW needs to do to get people through the door. If you want to advertise the opening match for Collision, you want to advertise that the first hour will be commercial-free, you want to advertise a major match with that doesn't have a predictable outcome to open up the show, you get that nice big jolt, and it's not a fake Big Bang Theory lead-in. You get a nice jolt of fans that tune in at 8 o'clock and they stay tuned in for 15, 30 minutes and they like what they're seeing, then you build on that. You continue. You don't just, all right, you know, we're going to, you know, take a step back for quarter number three and we'll just have so-and-so in action. That's what they do. And the numbers always go down. That's what they need to do. They need, more than anything, to hype up, you know, something that's going to kick off Collision. They can't put these so-and-sos in action because we're kind of tired of that after 4 years. And they got to build throughout the night. You don't just build because you open up with a promo and you announce the main event is going to be Roderick Strong versus Samoa Joe or CM Punk in action, this person. Just because we know what the main event's going to be. You know, it doesn't mean you open up teasing a main event and you close out Collision with the main event. You want every quarter to feel like it's more important than the quarter before. If the wrestlers want to take it an extra mile for the time that they have and they feel, you know what, so-and-so is going to, you know, have a match after mine, I'm going to make sure that we leave our mark so whoever follows us, you ever see on premium live events, pay-per-views, we'll see an incredible match. And then afterwards, you'll have like a talking segment or you'll have, you know, I hate to say it like this, for WWE, you'll have a women's match, you know, not necessarily, you know, Bianca Belair or Asuka, you know, lower. Like, look at the women's tag team match that we had on sure, we didn't know Shayna Baszler was going to turn on Ronda Rousey, but you know that WWE has highs and lows designed for their pay-per-views, premium live events, that you will see a match that they know is going to tear the house down and they're going to give them 20, 30 minutes and it's going to be insane. And then it follows with something milder because that's the emotional roller coaster you put people on. You can't continue that high. But when it comes to a TV show with ratings involved and advertisers and demos and everything else, yeah, every quarter is important. And you got to make every quarter feel like, you know what? And you can't simply do chaos, clusterfuck, crackerjack surprise. You know, you can't just simply, oh, let's have a no DQ match. Let's have a false count anywhere. Let's have a concession stand brawl. Let's have a Texas tornado match. Because that's what they fall back on almost all the time. The main event, instead of just having a good main event, they have to add one of the C's. Chaos, clusterfuck, crackerjack surprise. And people are so used to that. Why would they want to turn into something milder on a Saturday? So, let's see what happens. Unfortunately, my friends, our voice is not loud enough. You know, it's not clickbaity. You know, hopefully some people, you know, I know that some people feel the same way I do that are tuning in. and maybe somebody out there does hear it and listens or suggested something. But, you know, the one thing is for certain, that's why I even said about the AEW Fight Forever game. I'm confident that that game will improve, that a lot of the glitches will be fixed, that they will tweak the entrances, they will tweak some things in the future. When they do a future video game, they will make sure that it has crazy loads of commentary. They will definitely improve on what they started with. They started with a baseline, and they wanted to see what kind of feedback that they get. And believe me when I tell you, at the end of the day, the video game companies, the people behind the scenes in AEW, these are not all fragile babies that you have to coddle and you have to console and you have to have hot chocolate waiting for them with crayons. There are some people out there that want to be told, you know, what they don't like about something, because if everything's epic amazing, it doesn't give any incentive for anybody to improve on something. And even with the debut of that game, look at some of the people out there. We don't have to name names. You could see them. You look at them on YouTube and, you know, this is the greatest game ever and this and that. And all they're doing is, at the end of the day, other than trying to pad numbers, trying to get revenue for themselves, they're not helping AEW. They're not helping the video game. They're not helping Collision. They're not helping Dynamite. Because when everything is incredible and excellent, then why change anything? You know, to them, nothing is broken, so nothing needs to be fixed. So, you know, that, I think AEW is really, that's why WWE does not listen to people, you know, individually. You know, when you see a movement online and droves, people are getting behind someone like Damian Priest or Liv Morgan a year and a half ago or whatever, you know, when you see certain, you know, people getting, you know, a little bit of momentum and trend and people are really digging them, and they will take notice and they will acknowledge. But when someone insists on telling you that this person should be pushed or this person should be buried or this person should be fired simply because they're not going to listen to anybody. And that's why when we keep talking about Cody Rhodes, what I said a week after WrestleMania, I say now, I will continue saying until WrestleMania 40. Cody Rhodes will finish the story. Stop trying to change the story. WWE already knows how the story ends. They're not going to change it because a few people out there felt that Sami Zayn should have won Elimination Chamber. Jey Uso should dethrone Roman Reigns. Solo Sikoa should dethrone Roman Reigns. They already know how the next major story ends. It's just, how do you get to that point? And, you know, yeah. Let's see what happens. I'm pretty confident that Collision will rebound. I mean, it absolutely will with a live show. But the overall format of the show, the overall impression of the show, because just in closing, you know, I bring up the poll again for a reason. I posted that poll for 2 days. Almost nobody voted on it. And almost nobody liked the poll because they didn't want to go on record to say that Collision is either just another Dynamite or Rampage redo. Because in their eyes, either one of those answers is a negative thing. But when I said on the preview, before Collision ever debuted, that this feels like a Saturday night version of Dynamite, and you go into it believing that that's what it is, and then you start seeing it, and you know that that's what it is, then your anticipation is pretty much what you expected. You know, when you buy a product and you look at a whole bunch of reviews, there are people out there that just want a freebie. And they'll just say, oh, this is epic, amazing, this is unbelievable, this is the greatest thing ever, and this and that. And that's because they want a freebie. You know, but the people that are truthfully honest say, you know, look, you know, this is good, but, this isn't so great, and this is that, and this, this. Those are the people you pay attention to because they're more fair and realistic about it. So let's see what Collision goes from this point. But I will say this. If they continue doing what they're doing and the media that matters and the loud noise keep pushing an idea about Collision that is not, fans are going to tune away more. because you got 7 hours of WWE programming on TV already every week. Technically eight if you want to include main event. Technically nine if you want to include NXT Level Up. So you got 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, 2 hours of NXT, 1 hour of Level Up, and 1 hour of main event. And then we didn't even talk about premium live events. Now you're going to add on to it 2 hours of Dynamite, 1 hour of Rampage, 2 hours of Collision. You know, that is a lot of wrestling. So if people get their Dynamite fill and then Saturday comes and it feels like it's just Dynamite and it doesn't feel like Hobbs is really getting any push to a gold, but he's in a tournament. And same thing with Ricky Starks. And then you see the Jericho, Sting, Darby Allin goofiness from, you know, the Orange Cassidy stuff. And I don't have any problem with any of those guys. But if you see that carry over to Collision, and people are like, man, it just feels like I'm watching Dynamite. I watched Dynamite this week. I'm not missing none. Let me go out, have a good time. Maybe I'll watch a couple of clips on social media and that's it. That is not what WarnerMedia wants. Or AEW. No, no, no. All right. This is actually pretty cool. For my friends out there in Mexico, and believe it or not, we actually do have a decent following in Mexico. If you ever look at the trends for the shows, go check out Mexico. I think we're consistently ranked in like top 25. AEW announced today that VIX, not the vapor rub, which actually, I could kind of miss using Vicks. Anybody ever use Vicks in the wintertime? You rub a little on your chest, you put a little under your nose, that menthol feeling. One time I ate Vicks, and it burned my throat. That's all I remember from it. The Vicks, V-I-X, it might not even be pronounced Vicks. Vicks. They are the world's leading Spanish language streaming service. Owned by Televisa Univision, and they announced today that AEW and VIX signed a multi-year agreement that will bring AEW to VIX subscribers in Mexico. In addition, it will be available to people in Latin America and the Caribbean. Anybody who has access to VIX will be able to watch AEW. And they actually are able to watch AEW starting today. Now, anybody out there that is not familiar with Mexico, Mexico has multiple time zones. In fact, I think they got four different time zones in Mexico. They got Pacific, Eastern, the Mountain. So from what I saw, their time zones for airing Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision is the same pretty much as the United States. And what I mean by that is Dynamite airs here in New York at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. It airs 6 p.m. In Mexico, in Mexico City. That's the time zone. It's a two-hour time difference. Just like Rampage, here in New York, it airs at 10 p.m., but in Mexico City, it airs at 8 p.m. But there are other areas in Mexico that's the same time zone. So look at your local time zone to check when it airs. But it seems like it is pretty much the same air times as, you know, we get it in the United States. Which, you know, is interesting because nowhere on this press release do I read that it's airing live. Because, like I said, when you look at Mexico City, Mexico, it airs Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Dynamite. That's live. You know, Collision normally is live. You know, we didn't have a live show this weekend because of the holiday, but still, Collision airs 8 p.m. Here Eastern, 6 p.m. Mexico City. That's live. They're also going to air, like, Battle of the Belts and pay-per-views on 30-day delay. So, for example, Forbidden Door would be available for them 30 days after the pay-per-view took place this last weekend. So it's a pretty good deal. I mean, Mexico definitely loves their pro wrestling. And look, when you look at the fact that Andrade is back, and you know they do have Roosh, and they do have a nice, you know, Latin, you know, footprint in AEW, and you know that's probably part of the reason why we're seeing some people getting a little bit of a push right now. You know, right now everybody thinks that, you know, we're going to get maybe Andrade, Roosh, someone else. They'll feud with the House of Black. And that's not a bad thing when you think about it at the end of the day. So, all right, let's see what happens. All right, before we get into the NXT TV results from July 4th, I got to talk about something with the Great American Bash. This is not news. Trust me, someone out there in the next 24 hours is going to get the same vibe that I did, and they're going to report it as news. They're going to say, internal sources that we have within WWE say that Carmelo Hayes may defend the NXT Championship against a member of Judgment Day at Great American Bash. I'm telling you, expect that to pop up in the news wire very, very soon, because WWE is not letting go yet the little bit of interaction that Carmelo Hayes had, not only with Finn Balor, but with Rhea Ripley last week on NXT. Yesterday on NXT television, Carmelo Hayes called out the Judgment Day because, remember, the week prior, Rhea Ripley said, stay out of the Judgment Day's business. One of the things that we have noticed about Carmelo Hayes' run so far since Stand and Deliver is that he doesn't have any real good feuds with anybody. My bad feeling is that Trick Williams is going to turn on him. Because outside of Trick Williams, does it feel like Carmelo Hayes is feuding with anybody? I mean, yes, he had the match with Baron Corbin. And yes, Baron Corbin could end up getting a rematch. But Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes, they've moved on from there. Carmelo Hayes, it almost feels like he's in the same position as Rhea Ripley right now, or even Austin Theory. You know, the difference is, a lot of fans don't like Austin Theory, so they'll go online, especially journalists, and say, oh, WWE's considering taking the belt off of Austin Theory because he hasn't had a good run since WrestleMania. That's not Austin Theory's fault. That's WWE creative. But Rhea Ripley's had even worse, and nobody says nothing. So, again, a lot of what you read, a lot of what you hear is not news. It is perception by people out there and their feelings and their vibes, and they try to guess where WWE is going. They just try to claim that they have sources. So the fact that Carmelo Hayes is still bringing up Judgment Day, and Rhea Ripley did last week, and 2 weeks ago we had Seth Rollins get attacked by Finn Balor in NXT after his title defense against Bron Breakker, and Carmelo Hayes made the save. I get this feeling that Judgment Day is going to show up in NXT, call out Carmelo Hayes, and somebody is going to challenge him for the NXT Championship at Great American Bash. I would be fine against any member of Judgment Day. Of course, he's not going to take on Rhea Ripley, but Carmelo Hayes versus Dominic Mysterio, I'll take it. Give me him versus Finn Balor, and this time Carmelo Hayes wins, I'll take it. Give me against Damian Priest. You know, Damian Priest with the briefcase, you know, I don't want him cashing in, obviously, but I don't want him losing to Carmelo Hayes. That would probably be the one most likely have a disqualification finish. Or you have a tag team match. Maybe Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes versus two members of Judgment Day. But I have a feeling that they may go that route at Great American Bash. Look, I could be wrong. I'm not reporting this as news. So if it doesn't happen, you know, don't nail me. You know, crucify me and say, oh, you were wrong, DT. I'm just giving you a vibe that I have. And you know me about my vibes. Over the years, they get very, very weird and shit happens a lot of times. So let's see what happens. But I would definitely be down with that. But I'm also concerned. You got to really look at it. Carmelo Hayes is not having a memorable NXT championship run. Showing up on Raw was cool. Getting a little interaction with Finn Balor and Seth Rollins was cool. But when you pull all that aside, you know, he's not doing all that much. And when you got me kind of rooting for Baron Corbin last week because Corbin was putting on a performance, you know, that says a lot about Carmelo Hayes' current run as champion. Now, we expect Bron Breakker versus Ilya Dragunov, Great American Bash. Wesley and Mustafa Ali also for the North American Championship. That is expected. And then we got to start figuring out the women's side of things. Tiffany Stratton still, you know, she's only had the belt for, what, 2-3 weeks? So we give her a little bit of a pass, you know, right now. Now, when you look at the Great American Bash from 1 year ago, I'm going to just, it was only six matches, but I'm going to read you the results just to give you an idea as far as how much has changed in NXT in 1 year. A year ago for Great American Bash, Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez won the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships, beating Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. We had Trick Williams defeating Wes Lee, no titles on the line. Tiffany Stratton beat Wendy Chu. Carmelo Hayes, who was the North American Championship at the time, beat Grayson Waller. The Creed brothers retained the NXT tag titles, beating Damon Kemp and Roderick Strong. And in the main event from last year's Great American Bash, Bron Breakker retained the NXT Championship, defeating Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes. So there you go. NXT last night, Blair Davenport over Roxanne Perez in 12 minutes. Excellent match. Roxanne Perez loses no momentum despite the loss. Still a little fascinated at Roxanne Perez's run since she was forced to surrender the NXT Women's Championship after the match with Michael Satomura. You know, when is Satomura going to be back on TV? Baron Corbin video package aired, and he is pissed off, and he tried to invoke a little bit of nostalgia as the lone wolf, and it wasn't enough. He's got the money, he's got the girl, he's got the family, the fame, but he doesn't have the reputation. And he burned all his Happy Corbin stuff, and he says no more gimmicks, no more nonsense, no more bullshit. Mustafa Ali over Tyler Bate, 13 minutes after the match is over, Mustafa Ali issues the challenge to Wes Lee for a match at Great American Bash for the North American Championship. Kalani Jordan, with Dana Brooke in her corner, beats Tatum Paxley. 3-minute match. You know, it was what it was. After the match was over, Cora Jade gets on a mic, mocks Kalani Jordan's win. And anybody that's a friend of Dana Brooke is an enemy of hers. I'm just fearing that we may see Kalani Jordan get an upset victory on Cora Jade in the very near future. I'm telling you, I know people still can't buy into it, don't believe it, don't think it's going to happen. It's a vibe. You know me and my vibes. Dana Brooke's got to turn. Dana Brooke has to turn heel. I mean, it would be interesting if they had Dana Brooke and Cora Jade as an alliance. That would be kind of weird, but Dana Brooke's got to turn. She's got to turn heel. It's the only way that she's going to get fans talking. And there's a lot of fans that just will not buy into her work, including me. She's gotten way more opportunities than a lot of others over the years. I think her turning heel in NXT could work. Remember, when you're a heel, you can wrestle slower. You could be what they call methodical. I think Dana Brooke, it would be really interesting, especially if she changes up her look a little bit. We'll see. We'll see. Eddie Thorpe with Gable Steveson beat Damon Kemp by TKO in the NXT Underground match. This was good. I mean, honestly, I know there's a lot of people that want to see NXT keep underground. I was talking about this on Patreon yesterday. I'm not sure if that is a good idea. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, understand the people in NXT, they are training and working to try to get to the next level. And the destination is to go to the main roster. It's not just to have a job, have matches, and, you know, have a career in NXT. The objective is to go to the main roster. Anybody that's in NXT that is not trying to get to the main roster, they usually get let go. So you don't want someone to get this reputation of being great in NXT Underground, and then what happens when they get moved to the main roster? They can't bring any of that with them. It would be really, really difficult. So although I enjoyed this, I don't know if it's something that should be brought back on any consistent basis. Once in a while, yes. Settle some good feuds. You know, not everyone, but yeah. Gable Steveson suplexing everybody yesterday, that was a lot of fun. I mean, you could see he's got charisma. I mean, yes, this was pre-recorded, and obviously it was done, you know, not in front of the regular live crowd because the way they have to set up the ring, they got to literally dismantle a lot of stuff. But it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a little shorter than I expected. But then again, that type of a match, you don't want something like that going 15 minutes. So, JC Jane loses to Lyra Valkyria. This match went about 10 minutes. Excellent match. Listen, when Rhea Ripley sung the praise for Lyra Valkyria the week prior, there's no way Lyra loses this match. Unless there's major, major shadiness going on, you know, maybe even to the point where Rhea Ripley would have showed up and caused Lyra to victory. Remember, Lyra went on the UK tour. She wrestled a match while they were in the UK. So she may be called up to the main roster sooner than people think. I'm not so sure if that's a good idea because how is she going to leapfrog so many women that are on that roster right now? You know, bringing someone up is great. Seeing Indy Hartwell have her debut match on Raw Monday was great. But people were like, oh, that sucked. Her and Candice LeRae lost in a matter of 2-3 minutes. Well, what do you expect? There's so many people ahead of them. Like, okay, she's on the main roster. Now what? Now what? Segments with Dexter Lumis? That's not enough. You know, that's why when some people wish that some people, you know, want them to go to the main roster, you got to think, okay, what happens once they're there? That's the big question. A lot of people don't think about that. Noam Dar was out on a date, pretending like he was talking to somebody, but he was actually talking to the Heritage Cup. You know, it was a goofy segment. You know, they're setting up, you know, the next Heritage Cup feud. Kiana James, she was heading to her office. There was a wet paint sign on the door. She walked into the office, and it was all graffitied up by Gigi Dolin. So Gigi Dolin, their feud is not over with. Von Wagner, you know, remember my Frankenstein comparison 2 weeks ago? I think they're going with it. He put Javier Bernal through a table. I mean, squashed him yesterday, and, you know, Von Wagner's getting sympathy from the crowd, and I love it. I mean, after watching that segment about what happened to him as an infant, my God, how do you not want to root for this guy? I mean, yeah, I mean, it took, let's be honest, it took leukemia to get a lot of people to cheer for Roman Reigns, and it took this story about Von Wagner, get people to cheer for Von Wagner. I know it sounds twisted, but that's just the way it is sometimes in the real world. But I kind of feel like they're going the Frankenstein route. If you remember the story of Frankenstein, even if you only know it from Young Frankenstein, you know, the movie, Von Wagner, you know, thinks he's a freak and getting sympathy from the crowd. I think they're going the Frankenstein route. And maybe Robert Stone is just a very sexy version of Gene Wilder. You know, he's alive! He's alive! Creed Brothers lose to the Dyad in a loser leaves NXT match. I think people were shocked, shocked, shocked. The match, the way it ended, was kind of goofy. A masked fan from the crowd entered the ring, gave Julius a headbutt. And then another man, you know, people like looking around thinking that, you know, somebody else is going to show up. And the Dyad hit Julius with the double code breaker for the win. And you look at that crowd. I mean, that crowd realized immediately that the Dyad, no, they're not leaving as of yet. But the Creed brothers, they're getting called up to the main roster, man. I am really, really looking forward to that. You know, some people compare them to like Young Steiner Brothers. Not same characters, but just that real raw power and just, you know, there's something about them that is very, very special. And it's not just the strength and the freaky moves, some of them, that they do. There's something about them that you kind of feel the WWE Universe is going to get behind it and quickly. I really, really do. I mean, they may have to go down the same path as Kiana James and Caden Carter, you know, like they'll put on decent matches but lose, put on a decent match and lose, then get a win once in a blue moon. They may have to go the same route on the main roster to get to that point. It's going to be interesting to see who WWE puts them with almost immediately. So we'll see what happens. So we close out NXT with confrontation, Bron Breakker, Ilya Dragunov. Bron Breakker gets on the mic, talks about he's competed in the biggest match in NXT history a couple of weeks ago. That was against Seth Rollins. He said it was the highest rated NXT show in 2 years. Nobody believed that Bron Breakker had a shot to beat Seth Rollins until he speared him. And the energy in the arena just fell. Bron Breakker talked about being that close to winning the World Heavyweight Championship. He's only had 78 matches in his career. Talked about not having a chance to tour the independents, and people saw his development only in NXT. He talked about getting his first win against one of WWE's current hottest stars, LA Knight. He's proved that he can hang with the best in the business, and he's that damn good. He says people are wondering what's next for the most intense star in the WWE. Ilya Dragunov shows up, and he says, what's next for Bron? It's me. Ilya says that he's confronting Bron Breakker like a man, not attacking him from behind, and says that Bron Breakker is between him and the NXT championship. He is here to eliminate Bron Breakker. And this ends up to get into a brawl, and crowd loved it. I mean, to be honest with you, Ilya Dragunov has to become NXT champion. I think he's next in line. That guy, I really am concerned what WWE would do with him on a main roster. I said it a long time ago. I'd rather see him in Imperium instead of Giovanni Vinci, nothing against Vinci. I think Ilya and Ludwig Kaiser would be an unbelievable tag team. You know, I don't know, you know, they're small, but I still think they would be fabulous. You know, WWE might not be the perfect surroundings for those two guys, but they would be fabulous. But then again, when you see Ilya getting his ass kicked and the way he sells, crowd just eats that up. I eat it up. I think it's fucking spectacular. Ilya Dragunov has quickly become my favorite NXT wrestler. You know, way back when it was Keith Lee. Way back when, you know, we had other wrestlers. But, yeah, right now, Ilya Dragunov, to me, he's the one that I think NXT, I honestly think NXT fans would probably get behind Ilya more than Carmelo Hayes. I think when that day comes in the next couple of months that we have a stare down with Ilya Dragunov and Carmelo Hayes in the same ring, I think the crowd is going to end up getting behind Ilya. Not 100%, but I think the pendulum will weigh in favor of Ilya. He's that good. You know that he's ready for the main roster. It's just, you know, getting him on there, and then what? You know, you see JD McDonough. Everybody thought JD McDonough was even better than Ilya as far as being main roster ready. And right now he's pretty much designated to main event matches. And if you look at those main event matches, he's still not getting much of a fan reaction. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But a good, solid episode of NXT yesterday. Now, we don't have the rating yet because everything is delayed by a day because of the 4th of July holiday. So I will have that rating later on in the week. And every Monday we do a breakdown of ratings anyway. So, you know, we'll get into it on Monday. I did say earlier that I was going to give you the breakdown of Collision's rating from Saturday, you know, because I'm sure people are very curious, you know, if there was any big drops. As I said, the first 3 weeks of Collision, these ratings are pretty consistent. You know, someone, you don't see any quarters that are having major drops. That's why I think the lead-in is so important. Because when you see throughout the night, you're not getting any drastic drops. You know, there's a better chance that if you could get them through the door, they might stick around for a good portion of the night. The opening promos hyping up the matches for the Owen Hart tournament later in the night. MJF's open challenge and then his interaction with Ethan Page, that did 473,000 viewers to open it up. Unfortunately, that rating dropped to 445 once MJF and Ethan Page had their match. Dustin Rhodes and Powerhouse Hobbs, their match drew 451,000 viewers. You had Roddy and Samoa Joe cutting promos for their match in the same quarter. Anthony Henry versus Miro. And then you had the promos by Bullet Club Gold, CM Punk, and Ricky Starks. You know, that they're going to be barred from ringside area. That drew 463,000 viewers. Juice Robinson and Ricky Starks for the Owen Hart tournament match. That was the highest point of the night, drawing 486,000 viewers. Christian Cage, his segment, Sean Spears' promo, and then Chris Statlander versus Lady Frost. That dropped down to 452,000 viewers. But again, not a big drop. Andrade's vignette, the House of Black, their promo, and the very beginning of Roderick Strong versus Samoa Joe, that dropped to the lowest part of the night, which was 420,000 viewers. And then they regained 10,000 viewers for the bulk of their main event match. They closed out Collision with 430,000 viewers. So that pretty much was your rating breakdown for Collision. AEW results from Edmonton, Alberta at Rogers Place. And before I get into the match results, I got to make a comment about this MJF Adam Cole team. In no way, shape, or form am I criticizing their work. It's a lot of fun. The storyline is what it is. What's kind of really just making me want to just punch myself in the head. You know, the storyline is so obvious. And we know that the storyline is that MJF doesn't want to defend the AEW World Championship against Adam Cole. The last match they had, it went to a time limit draw. Adam Cole took him to the limit. So they are in this blind eliminated tournament. So as long as they can stay in this tournament and go to distance, the longer this goes on, especially if Adam Cole is MJF's buddy, then they won't have a title match. Ultimately, MJF is turning on Adam Cole, especially if they end up losing this tournament in the end. But what kind of just, it doesn't confuse me, but it's so disingenuous. It like, I have to watch Dynamite without social media going on in the background. And why I say that is this. You know, as far as everyday wrestling fans go, those that are not smart, and I don't mean that as far as IQ, but AEW wants the casual wrestling fan to think that MJF is turned babyface, that he and Adam Cole are getting along and they're a funny tag team and very entertaining. And today MJF is singing happy birthday to Adam Cole, which it was his legit birthday. You know, that's what AEW wants the everyday fan to believe. So when Adam Cole ends up getting attacked by MJF, the fans are shocked, surprised, you know, didn't see it coming. But when you see, you know, people in the media world, remember what I've been saying for well over a year, that there's a lot of journalists, especially on the AEW side, why report the actual story when you could be part of the story? Like, they know where this storyline is going. And instead of just playing up to it and, you know, you're breaking down in segments and, you know, getting into, you know, how good they are and everything, they're playing along also like, wow, MJF is an awesome babyface. Who would have ever thought that that MJF was going to turn and they're a great tag team and they have great chemistry. And, you know, playing along as if MJF really did turn babyface. You know, to see the some of the people in the media out there acting like MJF turned babyface and everything, when we know where this is going, I'm not trying to ruin it for anybody out there, but to see like polished people in the media, you know, playing off, because the storyline should be, you know, like Roddy Strong is probably the closest to it, warning his friend about MJF. Everybody else should be playing up to this as well. You know, like, you know, Adam Cole, be careful. He's going to turn. He's a turn. He's the devil. He's the devil. He's the devil. But instead, people are playing off like, oh, MJF turned baby. This is what happened a little over a year ago. Remember when MJF was acting a little bit babyface and everybody was saying, wow, he turned babyface. This is great. He's filling the void when CM Punk got injured and the media scrum happened. Remember that? And we knew MJF's the devil. He's a heel. There's no argument with that. The storyline is simple. MJF does not want to face Adam Cole. So MJF is doing all this stuff to avoid facing Adam Cole. That's the story. All right. Anyway, match results from tonight. Keith Lee, Swerve Strickland, they lose their blind eliminator tournament spot to Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin. Obviously, Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, we've seen this never-ending feud that never really has developed and gotten to that final spot. You know, we know that Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee don't get along. And, you know, this it was a fun tag team. But, you know, to see what's supposed to be a random tournament and the Bulls just so happen to pick Adam Cole and MJF and the Bulls just so happen to pick Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee, you know, it's just kind of, you know, if it, like I've said before, if WWE would have done that and the tournament would have picked Riddle and Gunther and Sami Zayn and Kevin, Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns. You know, like if every team was picked like that, you would have been like, oh, come on, that's awful. That's bullshit. You know, at least make this feel like it's somewhat random. Or they should have come up with a different concept or other than just random balls. But in the end, Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin, they advance. Max Caster, Anthony Bowens, and Billy Gunn, they come out there and we get a match against the Blade and the Bollywood Boys. I'm sure a lot of you remember the Bollywood Boys when they were in WWE. Okay match. You know, it was all right. You know, a little bit of corniness after the match with QTV, which is still a thing. You know, now because they have Harley Cameron, you know, and she claims that she's the most talented musician on the roster. You know, it's got a lot of corniness with it. Believe it or not, New Japan Pro Wrestling earlier today for the Strong Openweight Championship, Eddie Kingston beat Kenta. And there is footage online, and congratulations to Eddie Kingston. I mean, you know, he's from my neck of the woods, and I have seen him off and on for about 20 years in the ring. You know, he came up with Homicide and everybody else. And to see him getting, you know, his flowers, as a lot of people say today, that is awesome, man. Eddie Kingston, you know, legitimately good guy. I mean, how anybody would not root for him, you know, hey, you root for whoever you want to root for. I'm never going to tell you, you know, who you should and shouldn't. But for me, I root big time for that guy. It is official, even though we already knew it. Bryan Danielson is officially out for Blood and Guts. This is taking place in 2 weeks. You know, it was strange because people were reporting tonight that Excalibur is going to reveal his replacement in upcoming weeks. And I'm like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? It's 2 weeks from now. They have to reveal his replacement next week. And we still have to see who the fifth member of the Elite is going to be. And doesn't necessarily a guarantee or a lock that it's going to be Eddie Kingston. So we had a little teaser tonight of Chris Jericho and Don Callis possibly having an alliance. Jericho comes out to Judas. A little bit of, I don't want to say a babyface promo, but he acknowledges some of the big losses he's had over the last few months and might be time to reevaluate things, you know, in his career. And he talks about training under Stu Hart. Remember, they were in Canada. So a little bit more over than you would, you know, expect, even though Jericho is still beloved, even though he's a heel. When he talked about Stu Hart, you know, the fans weren't booing, but they were chanting Stu's name, and Jericho's playing up to it. But anyway, long story short, Don Callis comes in, and Don Callis is also from that neck of the woods. And even with that, he got the fuck you Callis chance tonight. And Don Callis, you know, has a long history with Chris Jericho. You and I have talked about it in the past, some of their outside ventures in wrestling. You know, it didn't end up the way that they thought they were. And Don Callis, you know, he talks about, you know, 6 years ago, that it was 6 years ago to the day that he called Chris Jericho from Tokyo and asked him, how would he like to main event the Tokyo Dome with Kenny Omega? They changed the course of history. And without that match, none of the people would be there. And Jericho might not even be there without his idea. And Chris Jericho recalled helping Don Callis get back into pro wrestling about 8 years ago and helped him get into AEW. So basically, Don Callis asked Chris Jericho if you want to, if you're ready to join the Don Callis family. And Jericho says he doesn't join factions, he creates factions. And we ended the segment with Chris Jericho giving the maybe as far as joining up with Don Callis. But, you know, this was a little bit out there because you don't know if Chris Jericho's turning heel or is he going to join up with Don Callis and remain, you know, excuse me, if Chris Jericho's going to turn babyface. You know, you kind of feel that Jericho's going to remain heel because it seems like even with Sammy Guevara, you know, who's going to be a dad soon, and they're playing up to that big on social media. Sammy Guevara, they're trying to position, I think, to be a babyface. And there's going to be a split between Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho, you know, maybe sooner than later. So does Sammy Guevara end up the babyface, or does he remain the heel and Jericho turns babyface? I think Jericho, especially that there's rumors down the line of Jericho versus Punk. But then again, hey, I've been saying for a couple of weeks now that CM Punk needs to turn heel. So if we get CM Punk versus Chris Jericho at Wembley, wouldn't that be something if Jericho ends up being the babyface in that match and Punk is the heel? That's role reversal. If anybody remembers their feud in WWE, Jericho was the heel, CM Punk was the babyface. So Chris Jericho, where they're going with this might be tied in some way with CM Punk. We will wait and see. As I said earlier, Roderick Strong, there was a segment. He was telling Adam Cole, be careful about MJF. He was wearing a neck brace, and he said he feels fine, even though Doc Samson says otherwise. MJF and Adam Cole beat Matt Menard and The Butcher to advance in the Blind Eliminator Tag Team Tournament. After the match was over, they had a little bit of antics. As I said earlier, MJF singing happy birthday. We get balloons, streamers, party hats. He tries to put one on Adam Cole's head. You know, it's funny stuff. I mean, they definitely are working great with this. I just wish people would push really what the storyline should be. You know, Adam Cole, be careful. Don't fall for this. You can't just have Roderick Strong doing it. And to see, like I said, people online, you know, that are intentionally avoiding what this storyline actually is to help fool casual fans, that's not the role of media, in my opinion. So, Ruby Soho beats Britt Baker to advance in the Owen Hart Cup tournament. After the match was over, we had Toni Storm and Saraya. They came out to celebrate in the for a little bit. As they went to the back, Sky Blue walked out and stared at Ruby Soho because they will have their semifinal tournament next week. Main event, Kenny Omega beats Wheeler Yuta, 17 minutes. I mean, a lot of you know my thoughts on Wheeler Yuta. The guy is talented. There's no question, you know, to me, I think he's better suited for Ring of Honor exclusivity. I just never bought into him, even with the Blackpool Combat Club. He just looks out of place to me. And, you know, AEW, look, fans that stuck around up until the main event, they got their money's worth. And this was not a bad match at all. But 17 minutes, should Wheeler Yuta be going 17 minutes with Kenny Omega? Even if they're playing off that Kenny Omega has injuries, to me, way too long. I'm going to be really curious to see if the final quarter hour, if the ratings dropped from quarter seven, because I don't know if this is a match that people would have been inclined. I mean, not for nothing, the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Elite has been going on way too long. We thought, you know, after the last pay-per-view match they had, that that was it. And next thing you know, we're now going into blood and guts, and they're still going at it. I mean, good thing is, in 2 weeks, we're done with this. And then we could finally start hybriding, is that even a word? We could hybrid these guys into new feuds. You know, where they go from here, I have no idea. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with the Elite and Kenny Omega leading into Wembley. I mean, even though we're still, you know, a couple of months away, technically, you know, a little less than 2 months, they're still, you know, they got to start getting a certain direction where people could start sensing where it's going to go. You know, when we get into WrestleMania season, you don't start feeling the big matches for WrestleMania only a couple of weeks before, 2-3 weeks before. By a month or two before, at least 6 weeks, you know, you start getting the vibe of where things are going. And I think you got to start setting the tone for some of the guys. At least tease it at minimum. But, you know, after the match, Claudio Castagnoli, Takeshka, you know, they enter the ring and they're beating down Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, the Young Bucks. They come out with chairs and they start beating everybody down. And we go off the air, you know, with a little bit of chaos. You know, and by the way, the reason why they had Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds out there is the lead-in to Rampage. You know, we have the 100th episode of Rampage going down this Friday. And the funny thing is, I'm already seeing people on social media saying, you know what, I wish this card would have been on Collision. That's what I've been talking about since before Collision debuted. When you start looking at these cards and you can intertwine it and say, oh, this card could be on here, that's when you know that, you know, what people were pushing of what Collision was going to be is not what it's going to be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but in a lot of people's eyes, a disappointment. When you think that, here's a funny but dumb comparison. I went to a wedding on Saturday, for real. A friend of mine's daughter got married. And, you know, they gave the menu. We picked what we were going to have. I had branzino. And my father saw this dish, and it was veal, and it had like a whole bunch of like mushrooms and breadcrumbs and stuff. My father's like, wow, it looks really good. So he gets the veal, and he's looking forward to it. And then when they finally served the food, they gave him pork. I swear on God, they gave him pork. And my father says, you know, you made a mistake. And the guy says, yeah, we ran out of veal. It's pork. And my father's like, I don't want a pork. I don't eat pork. So my father got a steak instead. Point is that, you know, when you're told something and you're really looking forward to it being a certain thing, and then you finally get it and it's not what people were painting it out to be, even if it's good, you're still disappointed. So anyway, Rampage, the 100th episode of Rampage, will be Jeff Jarrett, Matt Hardy. They'll be teaming up because the Blind Eliminator Tournament, again, this random stuff. Oh, Matt Hardy, Jeff Jarrett. Okay. All right. You know, to a certain extent. They're going to team up, take on Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia. Wow, look at that luck of the draw. Brian Cage and Big Bill will be in this tournament. They're going to be taking on Matt Sydal and Trent. We will have Hangman Page and the Young Bucks taking on the Dark Order of Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds. And then we have Hikaru Shida versus Marina Shafir. Now, next week's Dynamite, we have MJF and Adam Cole taking on the winner of either Brian Cage and Big Bill or Matt Sydal and Trent. I mean, honestly, either way, I think that's a little bit of a disappointing matchup next week, with all due respect. Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy will be taking on either Jeff Jarrett and Matt Hardy or Daniel Garcia and Sammy Guevara. Well, will you look at that? With the exception of MJF, we're probably going to have three of the four pillars and Daniel Garcia. They're probably, you know where this is going. Ruby Soho versus Sky Blue in the semifinals for the Owen Hart tournament. Whoever wins in that match goes on to the finals. And honestly, I like Sky Blue. She ain't nowhere near ready. I think it'll be ridiculous if they have a go to the finals. Then we're going to have Chris Jericho next week taking on Commander. Another match. Jeez, I almost forgot. Probably in a match that I wanted to talk about more than anything for next week. Nick Wayne. All right. I know a lot of you out there probably are saying right now, who? Nick Wayne? That's the son of Buddy Wayne. If you remember a year or so ago, AEW had signed like a 16 or a 17-year-old to a contract. This was Nick Wayne, the son of Buddy Wayne. Buddy Wayne passed away. And Nick Wayne, Darby Allin have a relationship. You know, not that type of relationship, but they have a friendship. They've come through wrestling a little bit. Obviously, Nick Wayne learning. And they did a segment on Dynamite with Darby Allin, pretty much giving, you know, a little bit of a rub for Nick Wayne. Listen, Nick Wayne's story getting to this point is a positive one, and you definitely want to root for this kid. But they have him going up against Swerve Strickland next week on Dynamite. Yeah, I don't expect Nick Wayne to win, but you know how AEW is, and especially since they signed Nick Wayne and that feel-good moment, you know, a match that probably should only go 2 or 3 minutes. Maybe Nick Wayne hits one or two spots and catches Swerve Strickland off guard. This probably goes into 6-7 minutes. And I think because of that feel-good moment, and again, you know, Nick Wayne's story is a inspirational one. Do I want to see an 18-year-old take on Swerve Strickland just because it feels good? No. Just being honest with everybody out there. AEW Collision this Saturday. We have the Owen Hart Foundation tournament advancing. We got Ricky Starks taking on Powerhouse Hobbs, and we also have CM Punk taking on Samoa Joe. Willow Nightingale, I believe, is taking on Athena. And we have, for the AEW Tag Team Championships, FTR is going to be taking on Bullet Club Gold. So, you know, pretty solid lineup for Collision this Saturday. I mean, that is a couple of matches, but honestly, none of those matches are, you know, ones that sound passable. I mean, every single one of them sounds pretty strong. I think Collision rebounds, ends up back over the sixes. I mean, the card is strong enough that if it stays, you know, we're talking about CM Punk. We're talking, and listen, we didn't even bring up a match for Miro or Andrade, but FTR versus Bullet Club Gold, Athena versus Willow Nightingale, Starks versus Hobbs, tag team champ. You know, I mean, CM Punk and Samoa Joe, if you can't get sixes on any night of the week, there is a major problem. There is a major fucking problem. But Collision looks strong, Rampage 100 looks strong, and some of the matches next week, you know, all right, we'll see where it goes. But with that said, I am going to jet out of here. Now, Slammiversary for Impact Wrestling takes place July 15th in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. Next Wednesday's Wednesday Night Dynamite would be on July 12th. So we have Impact this coming Thursday. They're obviously going to add a few additional matches to Slammiversary. So next week, we will run down the card. We'll do a little bit of predictions as well. And, you know, the card is strong so far. I mean, it's pretty sad to see almost nobody talking about it, especially a Trinity could very well end up becoming a Knockouts champion that night because she is taking on Deonna Purrazzo. That in itself, I would expect some people to talk about it, and they're not. But we'll definitely get into Slammiversary next week. We'll cover NXT, AEW, anything else that progresses from there. That'll bring us one step closer to the Great American Bash. We should have at least 3 or 4 matches announced by next week. And, you know, I think everything looks promising over the next 7 days. So I want to thank everybody for joining me for this episode. Send your feedback as always. And, you know, keep supporting DonTony.com. If you support the shows, download the audio shows. Even if you enjoy the video versions, download the audio shows. That is the lifeline of what I do. Without DonTony.com, these shows do not continue. And especially when you look at rankings, you know, the higher the rankings, the more exposure we get. The more exposure we get, the better the shows are, the more opportunity to grow. And, you know, when you look at all of these lists and the rankings for all of the podcasts out there, they do not include video. They do not include ad-free. They do not include Patreon or YouTube or channel members on, or just regular YouTube. So that's why DonTony.com is so crucial for everything that I do. So if you really support the shows and you want to help, and the most important thing is it's free. It's free. I want to keep these shows, you know, cost-free for everybody. Downloading the audio shows at DonTony.com helped me tremendously. So make sure you do that. If you know anyone else out there that would enjoy the shows, let them know about it. Don Tony is out of here. I hate talking like that in the third person. I'm out of here. Be well, everyone. All the best. Talk to you soon. Ciao.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.